He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Happy Friday, everybody. I'll tell you, we got a little bit of a slow news day around here, Joel. The biggest news coming out is that Conor McGregor went back before the Nevada State Athletic Commission, and they reduced his fine. Remember when he got a $150,000 fine and he was all upset for throwing that bottle? They've reduced it to $25,000. Somebody in the media called that a slap on the wrist. I don't know when $25,000 became a slap on the wrist. But at any rate, they got some resolution. I think he will pay that fine. He was refusing to pay the $150,000 fine, which just means he can't go back to Nevada. And that might even be able to follow him. They might even be able to get a judgment and follow him around to some other state. I don't really know how that works, though I trust they can. But at any rate, $25,000. I'll tell you this, though. None of that was really the point as much as I like the throw in the bottle thing. I thought it was funny when they took to throwing bottles at one another. Where it wasn't funny is out of camera shot from my computer where I watched that is apparently one of those bottles hit a kid. And so now the gig is up. They weren't just air balls or lobbed towards the Diaz brothers. Apparently it hit a kid. That's what the problem was.
Well, not the bottle. The bottle's not going to hurt anybody. It was the can of Monster that nipped the kid. Or maybe the bottle. I don't know. But I tell you this. Why do people that have very little money or no money think that people with a bunch of money can just pay whatever?
Yeah, slap on the wrist, somebody called.
That's 25 grand.
Yeah, a fine is not a slap on the wrist.
That's 2.5 stacks of high society, baby.
Yeah.
That's a little trip to Vegas.
25 dimes. That's gangster talk for $25,000.
Yeah, buddy.
So anyway, that was kind of the news that came out today. But I did think, you know, first off, I thought it was good theater. You can't hit the kid. And then you just made a point that the can would hurt him, but the bottle wouldn't. If it hits a kid, the gig is up. All of a sudden, yeah, somebody has to get involved. I'm not sure anybody even gets involved for the bottle throwing. I'm not sure they don't say the same thing I did, which is it was funny. And the people that were up on stage with Conor were laughing. I mean, there was some good theater to that.
Hold on. Listen, if you are at a Conor McGregor Nate Diaz fight, you're one of two people. You're a lunatic Irish fan, or you're the 209. Okay? They don't care if they get hit with the bottles. Oh, what, he got hit with the bottle? That guy's like, I got hit with the bottle.
Give the kid
25 dimes. Go find that kid and give the 25 dimes to the kid.
Give the kid the bottle and sign it. The kid would probably think that was cool. But I'm just saying, if you are a commission and a kid gets hit, the gig is up. Something has to be done, and something was.
Hey, or we're in Vegas. Let's skin it. Let's skin that 25. Let's flip it on a card. Let's skin it one time. We get that 25 and it's 50. You keep your 25. We lose it. It goes to the house. We're in Vegas, baby. You don't need Connor's loot.
All right. Onward and upward. You've got some notes. Let's get into it.
I don't have no notes. What are we going to talk about?
Why do you bring in those stack of papers and then I throw to you that you've got notes and then it turns out you don't have notes? What's with the stack of papers?
This is an untrue statement. I walked up here with you in this building with this bottle and this phone.
Oh, these aren't even your papers.
Yes, I said, hey, brother, can you get me some paper? And I said, well, okay, what are we going to do today? You know, people think we just make a show out of the thin air. And it is fun yelling and screaming at each other. Oh, it's a ball. But sometimes we can't do it.
I still don't know what's happening. You have no notes, or is this a joke?
I have some notes.
Okay, that's what I'm asking. I just said, what are your notes?
Do you have an idea?
No, I want to know what's on your notes that you just denied having, and now you're saying you do have.
You said stack of notes. There's a stack of paper, and there's
a page of notes.
9 words.
I stand corrected. Read those 9 words.
Vanderlei fight.
Me. Vanderlei is fighting with me.
Okay, would you like to expand on that, or can you?
Yeah, no, I can. So here's what's going on, and I've told you about this on the show before, that Bellator can keep a secret, and the way they keep it is they don't tell anybody. So I got put in that same spot sometime last week. Let's call it Friday. If I'm wrong, it's Thursday, but sometime last week, I get a contract sent over from Coker, And it is to fight in New York on June 24th at 205 pounds. But it does not say my opponent. Now, normally that would be a huge red flag. But Joel, I've told you this. I was armed with the information that both King Mo shared with me when he had the announcement of his Ranch Page fight and what Mitrione shared with me when he had his Fedor fight, which is that this is how Bellator signed them so that they could have this big ta-da moment. They don't bring anybody in on it. So putting those dots together, okay, it's going to be Vandalay. And I am going to be part of the announce team for King Mo versus Rampage. So I thought, okay, it's going to be Rampage, and they're going to bring Vandalay out down the ramp at that show, and that's where they're going to inform me and we're going to make this announcement. But I'm smarter than the average guy, and I've pieced this thing together. Well, no, that wasn't the case. All of a sudden, they put a press release out. I found out about this fight officially that it was Vandalay. And I had plenty of clues that it would be Vandalay, but I did not know it would be Vandalay. I found out, I came out of practice, was it Monday? And Luke Thomas had sent me a text message. He wanted to talk about the announcement that I was fighting Vandalay. And I wrote him back and said, is there an announcement that I'm fighting Vandalay? I hadn't been to the computers or anything else. I was in a workout room. And Luke's like, yeah, Bellator just broke this news. You guys are fighting and it's on pay-per-view. It's like, okay, Luke, let's start from the beginning because I don't know. It was a cool moment for me. I liked finding out that way. Luke thought I was putting him on. He's like, oh, come on, you must have known. It's like, no, I didn't have time to tell him this whole story of, no, it was a blank contract, and this is kind of how they do it. I didn't tell him any of this, but I did have a moment like that. I was at lunch with Roger Pollack. I'm going way back to 2013, and I wanted to visit with Roger. I hadn't seen him in a while, so I didn't take my phone. I'm like most people with a phone, right? What do they call these, Crackberry? I mean, I know it's an iPhone, but right, Crackberry because you're addicted to it. And so I didn't take my phone because I'm hooked on it. I wanted Roger to have my attention. We could catch up. So I get back to my car, and Kevin Ioli had been lighting me up. And so I called him, and he says, you know, what about you doing the Ultimate Fighter? And he's the one that told me. He said, yeah, you're doing the Ultimate Fighter, and then you're fighting John Jones for the world championship. I didn't know any of this. Kevin's the one that had told me. So I had that same kind of moment with Luke. The only piece that I had wrong, and I was pretty close to putting this together, but the only piece I had wrong is they had announced it as opposed to doing like a surprise reveal at the Mo Rampage fight, which is what I thought would happen.
I'm privy to a lot of stuff. This is the first time I've heard all this news all week, and this is the first time that I can say, okay, if you said it on air, then it's real. Then it's real. I have a question for you, and it's hard to ask you a question that I don't already know, that I don't know the answer to. You know, Randy was like that. I try to figure out something. Randy's coming on the show. Try to ask him a question that I don't know about. I believe, and I'm probably right, this is the first time in 50 fights that you've had that this is personal.
Yeah, I can't remember another time. I can't think of anybody I would rather fight. I cannot think of another time that it was so personal. With Anderson, it became personal, but I created a lot of that. I didn't know Anderson. I just decided I didn't like Anderson. I decided I didn't like the pink t-shirts and the earrings and the crooked hat, but I didn't know him. I know Vandalay.
Well, plus he was the one that you had to go after. He was on the top of the heap.
Yeah, there was all that stuff, and a lot of it in the reality afterwards, when I could look back on it and go, well, I never really had a problem with him. I didn't even know him. I just decided I didn't like him. So it was real for me, but the truth was I didn't know him. I know Vandalay. I spent time with Vandalay. I did the Ultimate Fighter with Vandalay. I had a street fight with Vandalay. I had him try to start a separate street fight, which I am happy to give him. I will fight Vandalay Silva the very next time I see Vandalay Silva, and that is not tough talk. I have told them, just keep us apart. Just keep us apart. It's not going to go well because I can't trust him. I can't do a face-to-face interview with him because I can't trust him. It's a matter of I have to protect myself. He's attacked me physically twice now, three times if you want to count the time he tried to turn into something physical. I can't trust him, and I'm not going to wait. You know, my father didn't tell me, like everybody else's dad, you can defend yourself as long as the guy throws the first punch. My dad didn't teach me like that. He told me the fight starts as soon as the guy's within arm's reach. If this guy has bad intentions and he steps within arm's reach, the fight has begun. And I broke that rule one time with Vandalay, and he pushed me. And I told my father-in-law that night, I will not make that mistake again. And I didn't. The next time he got within arm's reach, we had to fight.
Now, I haven't been in a lot of street fights. I mean, not a ton. Probably two hand, you know, maybe 10 in my life. That's not a lot for, you know, a roughneck. And, but I've seen a lot of fighters, a lot of wrestlers, you know, and I think you were kind of one of those wrestlers in college that the fight started when somebody said, let's fight, and you blast them with a double. I had a friend back home, Curtie Bennett. He was the toughest kid in the world to everybody, because as soon as somebody said, let's fight, he was slugging somebody in the head. And people don't know how to fight. So you had mentioned that the fight starts when they come within hand reach, you know, several years ago. And I was like, you know, that is true.
Yeah, that is true. There is. I don't know where that let them throw the first punch. I mean, I guess the law likes that, but I don't understand. If you feel threatened, and I'm not talking about some kind of barbaric act here and acting like you're not house trained and looking for trouble. I'm talking about when trouble comes and finds you and the guy steps within arm's reach, the fight has begun. And he started it, and you have the right to protect yourself. I think that my dad gave me good advice.
Okay, another question. I touched on it a little bit. We've talked about this before. Having a good idea that something's going to happen, you've known all along you're going to fight Vanderlei. You've known all along. But it changes when it becomes real. Is that what's going on right now, today, yesterday, the other day?
Oh, yeah.
You bet. Now, I mean, now, the great thing that you've done here, Chael, is, and I want to mention this. I want to talk to our guys, Ryan and Jake. This sport's changed, but it hadn't changed a bit. When you started fighting back at the dealership, there wasn't a bunch of places you could fight. If you wanted to go fight, you went fight. There wasn't a pro, an amateur. You want to fight, you go fight. What has happened now with all these small promotions, and it's good, is that people become professional fighters in their head. In their head, they're on a poster. They have a fight. They're pro. Before, there wasn't even sanctioned. So these guys that work full-time, studs like Ryan and Jake, and I'm talking to both you young men right now, you believe in your head that you're a professional fighter. You're a professional fighter when all you do is go to practice and fight and make a living to support yourself. Until that time, you need to get to practice and get better. It's just true. You don't have a choice. Now, where I come from, you follow the leader. Okay, you follow the leader. My wrestling coach was Tom Knotts, okay? And he was a mean SOB. And I'm going to talk about him in Kankakee next week. But I'd follow that guy through fire. And you mentioned it when you fought Marquardt. You were on the same card. You were the co-main event with the true godfather of this sport, which is Randy Couture. And you said, I'd follow that guy through traffic. I'd lead him through traffic. Listen, guys, Chael was in that room after laying an egg, even though Tito tapped, Chael lost, in front of millions of people. He was in the room in 3 days. That's the guy you look up to. That's the biggest show in town. You do what that guy does. Get to practice. Jake, I know you got some stitches, but you can get in the room. Ryan, where you been? I wanted to make that point because I'm so proud of you that 3 days after San Jose, me and you were driving to practice, and I told you on the way there, this is going to be the best practice you've had in months, and it was. You mauled that cat all night long, and you've been mauling people ever since, and you got 95 days to keep mauling people, and you got one more cat to maul.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's right. I'll tell you this. Ryan actually, he had his knee done. He can't practice if he wants to, and he has popped into a few sparring sessions. Jake needed a week off and maybe 2 weeks off. You know, I never told you about his fight. You weren't there, but what had happened in that fight is, you know, I've told you so many times, guys can't stand up with him. He will touch you up every which way when it comes to the hands. The problem that he's going to face in his career is when he goes and does that, and he did that in this fight. He started touching the guy up, and he was too hard to hit, and he was too elusive, and the guy put everything into a takedown. And a guy, when he's desperate to get you to the ground, is even more effective. His takedowns are even more effective. So this guy got him down with this extreme effort because the guy was not doing well on his feet. And then it was just a matter of getting up from there. Right. That it was just rinse and repeat. The guy found what he could do well, and he did it well. So Jake may need another week, but I hear your point that they do need to be in the practice room. Everybody needs to be in the practice room. You know, we saw it with Dave Jansen the other day. He couldn't work out, but where was he? He was in the practice room. Ed Herman is dealing with some stuff, you know, some pain. What he pulled his groin, but he's in the practice room. He's there. Even if he's on the sides watching or he's walking around and he's learning the techniques, but he is in the room. And those are just really good habits because you can form good habits as easy as you can form bad. Everybody thinks habits are a bad thing. But we have good habits that we do too. And getting in the car and showing up and walking through those doors when you have other places you'd like to be, when you can find 100 reasons not to come, but you got to find that one reason to come, those are just good habits. I think that's what you're speaking to. I'm not sure. Did you just scold Jake and Ryan, or yes, were supporting Jake and Ryan?
Both.
Okay.
Both. I scolded him, but my bigger point is this sport's changed in terms. It hadn't changed a bit in terms of, we're going to have Randy on next week. I'm going to ask him a question about you fighting Vanderlei. He's going to give me the same exact answer he would have 15 years ago in the same exact fight. So the fight itself is the same, but the smoke and mirrors behind the fight has changed. Guys think because of social media, because of the expansion of the sport, they think they're a pro fighter. You are a pro fighter. You want to talk about tough? People think that because the guy with the most fame and the most wins and the most money is the toughest. Man, that isn't always the truth. There's a guy in that, your gym, our gym, I paid dues, Gracie Baja Portland, named Josh Bennett. And Josh Bennett fought every week, everywhere, anybody, anytime. And he's still in practice. That's tough, fellas. That is tough.
Yeah, Josh Bennett is tough. Hey, I feel like you're making a good point here, but it's lost on me a little bit. What? Tell me what you mean when you say the pro fighter thing. You're a pro fighter if... What is your...
Okay, so...
What
so
are you saying there?
We make this trip to San Jose, and I haven't hung out with 25-year-old... I call them kids. When you're 50, somebody's half your age, they're a kid. People used to call me kid all the time. I hated it. It's no disrespect. It's just a point of being on this planet for a long time. Now, you want to talk about credibility, this, that, and the other with me doing this show and everything. Man, there isn't anybody that has been any. I know as much about this sport as anybody else. And you will agree with that, whether maybe not technique, but the sport itself. It came right out of the back of my car dealership, and I've watched it, everyone. I've had the opportunity to watch you guys, you, Danny, Matt, the young guys, Chris, that the people that came out of the dealership become famous in this sport. Now, we took a drive to San Jose, and they loaded up all this equipment, and they... At that time, Jake has a fight coming, and I'm like, man, what do you need so much stuff? And he's like, oh, you don't understand, I'm a professional fighter. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess, you know, I mean, you're a professional fighter on paper, but you're a professional fighter when you can pay all of your bills by fighting. My point is when you got in the sport, there was no professional, there was no amateur. So if the guys get out of that mindset that I'm only going to train when I have a fight coming up, a good example is
Tyree.
I get him mixed up. He's always in the room whether he's had a fight or not.
He has a twin brother with a similar name of Tyrell. You're okay to get him mixed up.
Okay. So my point is, I was like, you guys are missing the picture. You need to be at practice getting better. You can't lose an opportunity to get better all the time. Take away the pro out of it. You're not a pro. You're a pro when you can afford to be a pro. Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm starting to come along, but no, I'm missing it.
I'm saying the guys, the young guys coming up. Okay.
Okay, but you're saying that a guy brought his workout gear so he could catch workouts.
But it wasn't that.
But
it
on was, the other hand, just, you're saying just, that he needs to be at practice. Well, it sounds like he was trying to be at practice while traveling.
No, don't spin it. I'm just saying that's
I'm not spinning it. I'm trying to understand.
I'm just saying that's when it caught my mind that, yeah, Jake, you're a pro fighter on paper, but you just need to keep getting better. You know, you're fighting in little shows because there are little shows now. There didn't used to be little shows. There was the FCFF. There was the King of the Cage, some cage. There was three promotions. The guy out of Iowa had one, the manager. What was his name?
Monty Cox.
He had one. There was only three or four places that you could even fight at. Amateur, pro, everybody had a job, and everybody went to practice. So I guess that's what I'm saying. My point is you're a pro when you can afford to be a pro.
Okay. I'm going to have to say, okay, I'm not totally tracking. It almost sounded negative. Are you being negative that a guy has a dream and he's chasing it?
I want him to chase it. I want him to be in the room all the time. I don't want you get back to the room just like wrestling.
All right, so what is the message right now? If Jake and Ryan are listening, what is the message? Be in practice more often?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I said. 20 times.
Okay, I just wasn't following. I thought like you were trying to say they weren't pro. They are pros.
Stories are hard.
Well, I just want to make sure that I'm tracking on it. So I'll tell you another story. So I was at the Roseland Saturday, and Ed Soros came. And Ed Soros came. He's he's got his promotion Legacy Fighting Championships. They've got a deal with Access TV, and he was looking to come to the Northwest. He was looking for a partner to do a co-promote. And, you know, Ed has every contact you could think of. There is nobody in this space that Ed doesn't have their number for. Great guy to know. And I just said, Ed, look, you're here. I got a guy named Ricky Simone. I just need you to meet him. I think you're going to want him for your shows, but I just want you to meet him today so that I can call you in the future and maybe you can help me and you can make a call. And he said, yeah, I'm in. So I text Ricky. I thought he was in the building somewhere. Where are you? And he says, I couldn't make it tonight. What's up? And I said, I need to make an introduction. Ed Soros is here. And he says, I'll be there in 20 minutes. And he came down and we went downstairs where it was quiet. And we sat down at a table. And Ed was great. He gave him his attention. He made a call for him on the spot. Gave some advice. But most importantly, it was that contact. And I was trying to explain that to Ricky. That, hey, man, skills and combinations and punches and takedowns are really good, but a contact is better. It is who you know. And, you know, Ricky is one of those guys, much like Jake and Ryan. They've got all the skills to be in the big show. But getting that piece of paper in front of you, there is some politicking. There is some work involved. There is some running down to the Roseland and shaking hands and sitting down and having meetings involved. And I just thought it was a big step in the right direction. And Ed has followed up, but that is how it happens, I guess. That's my point. I like what you're saying, but I felt like you were maybe grinding on him a little bit. Are you grinding on him?
I love those kids, man. I want the best for them. They are some talented young men. They will be in the big show, but man, you don't need to love and coddle all the time. Sometimes you need to say, get your ass to practice, and that's what I did.
Yeah, they got to get their ass to practice. But I do want to just finish between you and I, and we get back to the show here. But between you and I, Ryan is out. He had his knee scoped. I mean, he can't. And and Jake was just in a really rough fight. You didn't see it, but it was a rough fight that would take, maybe a couple of weeks to. It's only been 8 days since his last fight. That's all I'm saying with you.
All right. I might have roughed them up a little bit.
They haven't been gone, man. One had surgery, and the other just got out of the ring.
All right. So on the way over here, we had a great interview. You had a great interview with the Kankakee Journal. That was very nice. And what I had for today was because everybody hears me and you go at it tooth and nail.
You and me.
The six of us. And I said, you know what? Why don't we tell some stories? Why don't we? Because you are a great storyteller. That are funny stories that are fun. So I'm gonna throw some out to you. I'm gonna tell one, and we're gonna make a show out of this.
All right.
The first one is I'm gonna give you hints. Fake play online $60,000 winnings.
Oh, that was you. You were in the car dealership, and this is right when online gambling came out. So what are we at? We're about 2001, 2000, somewhere right in there. And yeah, so you won $60,000 playing poker, and you're doing it right in front of me. You even let me play a few hands. I lost a bunch of money.
No, no, I called you and told you I won $60,000 online.
Yeah, but I ran down there.
From Woodburn.
Yeah, I was. I came in and watched this happen. And yeah, you were racking up the dollars, and then you let me have a few hands, which just consists of point and click. But I had a good time with it. I lost a lot of your money, and you weren't sweating it. And I left, and you ended up with $60,000, and you were telling me that'll change a guy's life, and you know that could buy a house, and you had all these things. I was just like, wow, this online gaming, man, that was so easy. He just kept winning. And then it was like 2 months later, you informed me that that was the free play. None of it was real. None of that money was coming. I don't even know if that's a good story as much as it was irritating. I was so happy for you for those 2 months. And frankly, it was a lie. It wasn't even a humorous thing. You lied. It was you said you won the money and you hadn't.
Okay. Back then, you're right. It was so the mats are in the back. So it has to be. It has to be, you're right, 2000, 2001. It's Saturday. I'm sitting in my desk. Wait, you know, I'm going to be there for 14, 16 hours. I got nothing to do. I'll tell this when Randy comes on. Randy's the one that invented texting, by the way. So I'm like, God, how can I get some entertainment? And the thing about Chael is, even though Chael was a very young man at the time, man, he looked the part as a very, very mature guy. So I call him, and I'm like, dude, you're never going to believe this. I'm up $60,000. Now, if I would have told him now, he would have never came in a million years. He would have made me verify it 100 different ways. But back then, he jumps in his car on a Saturday drives an hour and 15 minutes. All I want to do is hang out with him. Well, now I got the bit going on, so I just keep stringing them on, and eventually I let them off the hook. But that led to something else. The 225-pound bench challenge.
Yeah, I remember the 225-pound bench challenge. So 225 pounds is a standard Olympic-sized bar with two big plates on each side. That's 225 pounds. And they do that in the NFL Combine. That's actually where that kind of got known. Every player has to do that. That's just been a staple of the combine for a number of years, and you see how many times a guy can do 225 pounds. So we had some kind of a bet. I think we even had money on it.
$500.
Okay. And I got 26 reps, and that was a good number. That was actually, for me, that was even my own record. I've never beat that before since, but I got 26. I think you did 22 or you did 24. You did a lot. We both did a lot. It was an impressive number. Yeah, but I won.
The payoff's right after this. So we make this bet, and I need 30 days. Now, I've never seen Chael Sonnen lift a weight in his life. In his life, I've never seen him. Well, that's not true. We've done cardio weights together, but I've never.
At that point, you've never seen it.
Okay. So I'm like, yeah, I'll bury this kid in a month. So we put it out a month. And I sit down and I knock out 24, and I'm like, there's no way on earth, on the planet earth, you're going to do more than 24. And you do 25 or 26, you beat me. I'm madder than a wet hen, and I owe you $500. And I'm getting ready to pay you. We're walking out back, and what do?
So we get out back, and you got to understand, this is the back of a car lot. And in the back, so on the front is where you would put the cars that you want to sell. And in the back is the part where you put the cars that, you know, new trades and stuff like that you don't even want people to see, that you're going to auction off or tow off and just get rid of. And for reasons that I still don't understand, you bet me there was a car sitting there, a Volkswagen car that looked like it ran and drive just fine. It wasn't that bad of a car. And you bet me X amount of dollars.
The 500 I just lost.
Okay, that you said from wherever we were standing, we had a 25-pound plate. Took a 25-pound plate outside, and you said, I can throw this and break out the window of that car from here. And I bet you that you couldn't do it, but either way, I was just like, wait a minute. So if he wins, he has to throw this through the window of his own car. I'll pay the $500 just to see this. And you did. Sure enough, you threw it. It was a good throw. I didn't think you'd get there, but you did, and you busted out your own window, had your $500 back, and then realized what you did and realized maybe that wasn't a great move.
No, not true. The thing had a bad tranny. I was never going to pay a dollar on that thing. I was going to have it towed away. Now, the car's in the back. I took him in for no money. If it was in the back, it was free money. And I would wait until one of the shows. I would wait until one of the UFC events. And I would tell all of the wholesalers, the gypsies in town, come and take these cars, bring a bunch of cash, because you got to buy them all. If you don't buy them all, you don't get any of them. And that was my play money. But the payoff was how that window shattered. And the look on your face was like, why did he just do that?
Oh, it exploded. It wasn't like the weight went through the window. The whole window, it just exploded. Fell right down to the ground. And yeah, I still don't know why you would throw a plate through your own car. I mean, you could say the tranny was bad. I don't know. I didn't try to start it, but the car looked good. It had a window, and now it doesn't. And you did it, and then named yourself the victor.
All right, it's March, which means it's time for the madness. And it's crunch time in the NBA. So you know we got it all covered on the big podcast with me, Shaq.
And we're way more than just sports, Shaquille. So be prepared to laugh, folks, as we bring you the best basketball coverage, the biggest names in hoops, like Kevin Garnett, Chris Paul, Dick Vitale, Grant Hill, Chris Webber, and many, many more.
The Big Podcast with Shaq. Check us out with new episodes every Monday at podcastone.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Jail Sonnen.
Okay, now I'm going to tell a story about you that I love. This story, I'm going to leave names out of it. It's when I was like, oh, that is Pat Sonnen's kid. For me, this story here was like, oh wow, I would have never done it. Would have never thought of it. Wouldn't ever have pulled it off.
Now you've got me interested.
This story's called The Repo Man. So, again, being in the used car business, and man, I've hated the first person I ever talked to in the car business, I made $700 off of, okay? I hated the car business then. I hated it when I made millions of dollars doing it, and I hate it today. But You learn a lot being in the used car business. So by this time, I own my own car dealership, and you need to help a friend get a car.
Yeah, so you want me to take over from here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so my buddy Sean, we went to college together. He needed a car. He graduated a year before I did. So he needed a vehicle after school, and I sent him up to you, and you got him in a car. And you told me that I was going to, that I need to co-sign for the car. Well, I didn't even know what that meant. You know, I can't tell you how much I left college unprepared for the real world. I didn't know what a credit score was. And they don't teach you those things in college. I didn't know what the term co-sign meant. Oh, I need to sign here so he can buy a car. What's that have to do with me? So I did. Now, when he quit making payments on that car, I quickly found out what it meant to be a co-signer. When I started making those car payments. So I was getting the runaround from him. He would not make those payments, and then he was fibbing to me. Oh, I made that payment. I don't know what's happening. It was one of those deals. And month after month, I was sending that money off. And so I got the VIN number. It was a Honda. So I went down to a Honda dealership with the VIN number, and they were able to make me a key right there. Now, I knew they could do that from your time in the car business, telling me when you would get cars, as long as you had the VIN number and went to a dealership, that they could print you a key. So I had a key made, and I got his address, and he lived in a different state. I had to get on an airplane, fly out there, take a taxi, found that car, helped myself inside, and drove it back to Portland.
Well, let's paint a bigger picture. The car was in Bumblegip, Montana. So you flew, and what you didn't know until this second that I'm going to tell you right now, because quite frankly, I forgot, is you were never on the hook for that car. I kissed the paper, which you didn't even have a job back then. You couldn't even prove income. So as the dealer,
that's all true. It's $288 a month, and it hurt. It hurt bad.
So if you would have said, no, I'm not making that payment, Oh, Stephanie at Reliable Credit would have called me and said, hey, you owe me $3,500. And I would have had to write her a check, and then it was on me to go get the car. But anyway, you didn't know that until just now. Chill, I don't know he's doing this. I do not know he's doing this. He didn't bring me into the loop at all, ever, until he's in Montana. He's taken a plane, two or three different planes, and then how did you get to the...
I had to take a taxi once I got there, and it was like a $98 taxi. I mean, this was the most expensive trip to get this piece of crap car.
Dead a winner.
Yeah, but it was principal. Yeah, dead a winner. But it was the principle. You know, it was the principle of the whole thing, you know, that we ended up in this spot. So I went out there and did it, and I remember when I got that car, I was driving back. I was going to drive straight through, and I did. I hit a snowstorm. I couldn't see anything, and I had to tailgate an 18-wheeler at like 4 feet behind him because he was all I could see. I had to be that close to him so I could see his bumper because it was snowing so bad. I'm going over mountains and passes. I mean, this is a little tiny Honda. However, it never slipped or anything. The car did great. But Sean called me. I was in the car, and he called me, and he asked me about the car. Now it's like 3 a.m. It's some crazy time. And I answered the phone, and I said, yeah, you know, you didn't make the payment on that car, and they came and got it. I just said, they came and got it, they being me. And he says, oh, okay. He said, do they have the car now? And he had a radar detector in the car. And right when he said, do they have it now, the radar detector went off. Beep, 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 beep. And I said, yeah, they have the car now. And he knew what that meant. He knew I came and got the car. I had to call his girlfriend. I had to get the address. I mean, there was a lot to it. He'd put it together already. But yeah, man, I got the car. You know that car? You know what happened to that car?
Hold on. Let's stay on this because I do. Okay. What I'm telling you is, young sonnen, this is, let's call it 2002. So you're a young man. I own a car dealership. I could have figured out a way to get the car. He doesn't come to me on anything. He doesn't call me until he's in Montana trying to hunt the car down. And I had to give you called me and you tell me this story. I'm like, you're doing what? You did what? And you're, of the matter of fact, listen, I don't want to tell you the story. I need your help right now. And what I gave you is I pulled the file out and gave you the references to go hunt the car down. You also had to hunt the car down before you could then steal the car back.
Yeah. All of that is true. It was not an easy mission, but I'm glad I did it.
How long was the drive?
Well, it was a long time. So it was either Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, or Spokane, Washington. It wasn't Montana, but it was one of those two. And I think it was Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. But at any rate,
so that's a 12-hour drive.
Oh, it was very long. And now you're talking about snow and a storm. I mean, it was a mess. It was an absolute mess to get all the way home with it. That car, I loaned that to a guy, Ben. What was Ben Craig? And Ben stole the car. Ben never brought that. I've never seen that car since. I loaned it to Ben. I've never seen it since. I filed a stolen police report, the whole bit. Insurance company wrote me a check, ended up buying the car. And then years later, the car was found in Grants Pass, Oregon, and Ben was dead. Ben had stolen the car, and then he'd stolen a bunch of camera equipment from some company he was working with, and then they found him in a cornfield overdosed.
Yeah, that's a shame. Now Ben was the guy. You might have been already on the. Didn't he do some promotion for the FCFF or something?
Yeah, that's why I loaned him the car. He had to go down to Medford.
Okay, so somehow it's the night before Tito fights Randy, and I've got a sack of money to put on the fight. Now, it sucks. It sucks betting on a friend. It's hard because now you're rooting for your friend to win, and you're also rooting for yourself to win. It's hard to do that. It's hard to do that. Now, it's even harder to place a $10,000, $15,000 bet. And I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't feeling good. And Ben said, this is crazy. It's a Olympic wrestler against a guy that never placed in the Division Ones. I went straight down and put 10 dimes on Randy. So, Ben, you helped me there. Bless your heart. Sorry.
10 dimes, gangster talk for $10,000.
All right, let's see if you remember.
Do you know who used to do that? I'm stealing that from a guy. Do you not recognize that? There was some guy that was on the Howard Stern show, and he used to always say that all the time. I can't remember what his name was, but he was funny. And he was just a character. And he used to say that. 10 dimes, that's gangster talk for $10,000, right? You don't know this guy?
No, but I mean, a dime is a G, and it's been a G forever.
Yeah, that's why it's funny that he then thought he had to, you know what, just forget it.
All right, let's see if you remember this one. Skin It.
Yeah, Skin It. You're talking about the war table at the MGM Grand. The only, go ahead.
Don't forget Baroni.
Only casino in all of Las Vegas where you can play war, where they will flip your card, flip their card. Whoever's got the higher card takes the money. Worst odds in Vegas. Nobody played war. That table was empty at all times. There's a reason that there's only one casino that had it, because nobody played war. And you and I loved it. And if you got a draw, and the reason the odds were so bad is if it was a draw, if you both drew a nine, let's say, you either lost, you either conceded to the dealer, or you had to double down. So now you're putting out double the money to win half. That's why the odds were so bad, and nobody played, but we loved it. I think we loved it because we understood it. It was just so simple. Turn a card over, grab our money and go, or give our money and go. And yeah, we were playing war, and you kept telling that dealer to skin it, which meant turn the card over. That's skin it.
If you remember, that was the night that Randy fought Pedro.
Part two.
That's the first time the event is ever in Las Vegas. And I don't have a bunch of money. You don't have a bunch of money. I think we started with $160. We went to the crap table, won two bets there, 160 to 320 or whatever. Went somewhere else, the roulette wheel, won two there. Same. Now we're just doubling.
Every time we bet the whole, we bet it all.
It ended up being seven in a row, and the last three was at the war table, because I've been gambling my whole life and I've never seen a game of war, and we both thought it was funny. We go over there, we hit three in a row. I think that was seven. So now we've taken 160 to like $1,600. And before the last bet, Phil Baroni, it's 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Phil Baroni got bludgeoned by Matt Lindland that night. He's rolling down with a robe.
Yeah, I remember
by the
that.
Table.
He was in the MGM robe, the one that's in the bathroom, and he had the slippers on, like from the spa that he must have taken. And yeah, it's like 2 a.m, and there's Baroni
beat like a drum.
Yeah, and you could tell he had nothing on under that robe. Guaranteed, he was naked underneath that thing. And yeah, Baroni was just stumbling around. I don't even know if he was gambling. I don't know what the hell he was doing. I only remember it because he was in the robe.
Well, and that was the last skin it. We skinned it, and then we went to Randy's. It must have been earlier than that, because Randy, if you remember, his after-fight party, to show you how much this sport has changed, his after-fight party was 12 to 14 people in the suite of the UFC, but that suite was a deluxe. It wasn't a real suite. And we went up there for about 10 minutes and called it a night.
Well, Joel, I'll go back. Let's go back just to yesterday. So you and I were driving around, and we had my dog. We had Danger with us. Danger usually stays outside when the weather's nice, but I had a guy that was coming to work on something on the house outside, and Danger's a barker and a nipper and everything else. So we took Danger with us as a way of getting him out of there. So we're driving, and we pull into a parking lot, and you jump out of the car, and you're pounding your chest, and you're bent over. You think you're having a heart attack. Something's going on. Very scary. I'm not making light of that in the least. But so we deal with that. I get out. Hey, what's going on? You tell me how you're feeling. Hey, do we got to get you to an emergency room? You know, which for the listeners, eventually, yes, that's exactly what happened. But we go home, back to my house, at which point we realize Danger is no longer in the car. So by process of elimination, we deduced that Danger must have jumped out when you pulled over and jumped out because of the chest pain. So we go back and look for Danger. We don't find him. So finally I get a phone call. Danger has a chip in him. So somebody gets him, however that story worked out, I don't know, but they got him to wherever he needed to be scanned. And so we head down there to pick him up, and the place is closed. So I didn't tell you this. I get a call this morning, and if I don't come get the dog right now, they're going to send him to a shelter. It's like, hey, time out for a second. I pay a service for you to have a chip in him. There is a reasonable expectation by me that you are also going to hold him until I can get there in a reasonable period of time. And the only reason I don't have my dog already is you guys were closed. So for me to assume a place that I pay a service to, service fee, can also house a dog once they capture said dog is very reasonable. And they told me they're going to take him to a shelter. I was so pissed. I almost called the attorney general. I was that mad. I was going to go to the attorney general of Oregon and inform them that a place that I pay a service to is going to send my dog to a shelter as though he's a neglected dog. I was that upset about it. And I think I have the right to be. Instead, I just went and got the dog. But I'm going, guys, you've been closed. You just opened. You opened at 9 a.m. You were closed. I was here. It's now 10 a.m. That means I'm an hour late. What if I was out of town and the dog slipped out and got away? He's in a shelter, but by the time I reached, that's not, I'm still upset about that. But at any rate, that's what happened to Danger. So I have Danger back.
All right. I'm glad you had Danger back. Let me tell the story. It's a fun story. So Danger Dog, I love Danger Dog. I love Danger Dog. And my chest starts hurting. It, real bad, right in the sternum, but I know it's not a heartache, but it starts hurting pretty bad, and I drop you off, and you're like, no, come inside. What you don't understand about your mansion that you live in, that's not your house, bro. You think it's your house. You do. In your head, right now, you're like, well, of course my house. Paid for the house, own the house, live in the house. You think that's your house. It's not your house, brother. It's Miss B's house. That's her house. So you're like, hey, do you want to come in and lay down? And I'm like, I know you're traveling. I know you're busy. We just did a day together. I'm the last person Miss B wants to see. Okay? It's her house. Miss B can invite me to her house. You can't. So I leave, and I start to go down the hill, and my chest starts hurting so bad. I mean bad. And I'm like, hey, I need to come over. You've texted me, do you have danger? You've texted me, do you have danger? And I never saw that text. Never, ever, ever did I see that text. So I go to your house and call my sister. My sister's like, you're not having a heart attack. You know, B looks at me. She's like, he's not having a heart attack. Everybody knows I'm not having. I know I'm not having a heart attack.
Well, the only problem is we thought it was a heart attack. However, you were grabbing the right side of your chest, and I had informed you your heart's on the other side. So we took that as good news.
So, but I don't know the dog's gone. I don't know the dog's gone. Our deal, me and Thero's deal, which I love, by the way, is Thero gives me a hug. We go play in the gym. I love that. He ate his food. He did everything he was supposed to do. Gave me his hug. I've got to go play with him in the garage. So I go out there. Miss B's making him popcorn or something. I know Miss B doesn't want me there. I know she doesn't. She knows I'm not having a heart attack. I'm just making sure I'm not. So I get in the garage. We start playing, and I hear, you two idiots. You lost my dog. She yells, take him to the hospital. Go find my dog. I get up. She grabs the boy. He scoots out. And I jump in the Bronco and I get ready to leave. You come out to me and say, hey, we lost Danger. And I'm like, yeah, I know we lost Danger. I just heard. I'm sure we lost him up the street. So anyway, in the future, that's not your house. That's B's house. Okay? That, as soon as you realize that, the better your life's going to be.
I just thought if a friend was having a chest buster, he could come in and lay down.
You know, she surveyed the scene. She heard me talk to my sister. I didn't fall on the floor and start flipping. She's like, get out of here.
She went and got you heartburn medicine and threw it at you. She went and found it in the medicine cabinet and from across the room threw it at you. I said, did you know you threw medicine at a guy who might have been having a chest buster? And she goes, he's got heartburn.
She was right.
Yeah, it turned out she was right.
She was right. I dropped you off, went to the emergency room. It went away. So I got up and left. But the bigger story is that's not your house. That's Miss B's house. We were on our way over here. You were talking to Kankakee Journal. They're going to write a good article for our event that is in Kankakee live next week. Go to Eventbrite.com. Get your tickets. I think we got about 60 left.
You have to tell people the name of the show. Eventbrite doesn't just sell our tickets.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Beyond the Fight with Chael Sonnen is the name. You made an interesting point in the conversation I heard with you, is nobody respects boxing.
Yeah, the Kankakee Journal was asking me, are Conor and Floyd going to fight? It's like, guys, I don't understand why you're not announcing this fight if you're a sports writer. A sports writer that hears there's going to be a fight will go to the source. He usually will not reach the source. He'll usually have to talk to a manager or a trainer or a coach or the guy's wife, a training partner. In this case, we can get straight to Conor, who's saying, yeah, we're going to fight, and we can get straight to Floyd, who's saying, yeah, we're going to fight. So you're either calling those guys liars, or you need to announce the fight. And I don't know what media is waiting for, aside from we don't know the when and where. We've got the who and the what, but we don't have the when and the where. So it is hard to announce anything if you don't have a date and a venue booked. But you do have two fighters that are saying they're going to fight. So either their words are good or they're not. So I think the media should have announced the fight. However, I did make the point to him, but I made that point on this show as well. The mere fact that people are discussing this and giving Conor a chance means that people do not respect boxing. If I was to tell you I was going to go play LeBron James in basketball, you'd laugh. And if I stopped and said, no, Joel, I'm going to sell out an arena and I'm going to do $1 billion worth of business, I'm going to put it on pay-per-view and this is going to be a huge spectacle, then you'd really laugh. If I told you I was going to go play golf against Tiger Woods or I was going to go play tennis against Serena Williams, it would be a laughable thing. Here I am, a guy who's never done it, taking on a guy who's never lost in it. And that's what you've got with Conor and Floyd. Yet you have people giving Conor a chance, including people from the boxing world. And the bigger tell here as a society is that we just don't respect boxing. We do not respect that as a sweet science, as an art, as a form of any kind. And maybe we shouldn't. I believe we should, and I believe that fight lasts 30 seconds. The mere fact that people are giving Conor a chance, I think, is the biggest story of it so far. I think that is the biggest storyline. A guy who has never done it against a guy who has never lost at it, and you're giving the guy who's never done it a shot. And the odds makers and the fans, the media, even fellow pugilists from Floyd's side are saying that Conor can give him problems. And it just discredits and is an embarrassment to boxing. And maybe boxing deserves that. Boxing's a fringe sport at best. Nobody does it.
Well, that was your point that you said to Mr. Dykstra of the Journal. You said, listen, I'll challenge you that you've never met a boxer in your life. You don't know where the boxing gym is. And he said, Genesis MMA. No, Genesis MMA, yeah, you can buy boxing gloves. There's not a boxing coach in that gym. It's an MMA gym. The only place you know how to get boxing gloves is there's more MMA gyms now, even though the sport's 20 years old, than boxing. There are no boxers. You said, have you ever met a boxer in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I asked the guy that. Have you ever met a boxer? And he tried to say, yeah. A lot of people do it for exercise. I go, no. Do you know a guy that's put on gloves and got into a ring on Saturday night and boxed another man? Have you ever met him in your life? And he finally had to say no. And I personally like boxing. I am a boxer. I have boxed competitively and amateur. So, I mean, I'm not turning on the sport. I'm turning on my own sport. But the reality is I didn't know that society did not respect it as an actual skill and as a legitimate sport. I did not know that. And my point that you could not take anybody and put anybody that's never done it and put them against the best who have ever done it in any other sport and give that other guy a chance, it's really quite fascinating in that regard. And, you know, I made that point to him, and it's pretty infallible. I mean, you just can't get around it.
Great point, and it is time for shout-out time. Want to shout-out to 5% Nutrition for helping me with the event in Kankakee next Thursday. Tom Mann, Pete Hike, Janie Piani, John Gatewood, and Tom Dykewell, and also a special thanks to Kylie Anderson.
Wow. God, that's annoying. It's so annoying when you do the cheap pops. And then when you don't know their names, when you stumble over their names, that's not wonderful news.
Names are hard.
Names are tough, man. Doing reads is tough. I'll tell you what, everybody, do not put off getting healthy, getting in shape, and getting the body you want any longer. Go to ultimateweightcut.com. When you check out, use promo code BADGUY. One word, B-A-D-G-U-Y, you will save 40%. There is no waiting. It will come to you right then on the computer. You will have your diet and your nutrition plan. Do not put it off for another second. You don't have to wait 30 days for a book to come in the mail. No special diet kits. It's going to give you everything you need right there. Go to ultimateweightcut.com. Use the promo code BADGUY and save 40%. Joel, anything else?
Bitter enemies, buddy. Love that tag. They should call this fight, the pay-per-view, Bitter Enemies.
Yeah, man. I mean, on the poster, they might as well put a road right down the middle of it and just market this as a street fight, because that's what it's going to be with Vandalay and I. We're going to New York, and Fedor and Mitrione are on the card, and there's several other fights, too. I know about them. I can't announce them. We'll let Bellator do it, but it's going to be the biggest event that Bellator can possibly bring. That's coming June 24th. We will talk more about that. Listen, everybody, enjoy your weekend. Joel and I are going to have some fun in Kankakee next week. Then we're going to be in Chicago. The very next night is Rampage versus Mo. It's live. It's free. It's only on Spike TV. Until next time, I'm Chael P. Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Keep fighting, Jack Strong.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
I'm Mick Garris. When it comes to horror, you might know me as a writer, producer, and director. But I also love making people open up. I'm getting together with the most fascinating people in fright filmmaking. I'm going to pick their brains and find out what they know. But if they've got any secrets they're determined to keep, I have ways of making them talk.
Download new episodes of Postmortem with Mick Garris every other Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or you can subscribe on iTunes.